So, Parashat Korach. So, we went to Poland this year. I went with the boys from Oraita, and you could spend a whole week just sharing the stories of a week in Poland. But there's one that sticks out in my mind because it was so unexpected. We were, I think, in Auschwitz in the morning. I don't remember exactly. We were in the Lodz ghetto in the morning. And we were on our way back to the Warsaw ghetto. And sandwiched in between the Lodz ghetto and the Warsaw ghetto, we were on this long bus ride. We stop in some small town, city. And the bus stops. And he says, okay, the tour guide, this amazing tour guide. And he says, everybody off. Okay? And we all get off. We're standing in like some nondescript Polish town, city, town square. We can't find any reason we've stopped there. And he splits us up into two groups. And I happen to be in the first group. And he says, okay, follow me. And we walk inside an apartment building. And we walk inside the apartment building, and it's late in the day. It's starting to get dark, you know, kind of like bluish sky. And there's no lights inside the apartment building, so we're not sure where we're going. And walk down to the end of the hallway, we turn light, and he turns on a flashlight. And walk down some more stairs, and we walk into, I don't know any other way to describe it, it was a bunker. There was a fellow named Mr. Fishman. And when the Nazis started rounding up the Jews of Częstochowa, he saw what was coming. So he started digging a bunker. And he basically knocked through a wall in the basement of the apartment building he lived in. And he started digging on his own without telling anybody else what he was doing, because, of course, you know, the best way to keep a secret is you don't tell anybody. You're the only one who knows it. And he built a bunker, which I would say it wasn't like a square bunker. It was like in the side of maybe from, what's your name? Remind me. Pardon?
Eliyahu.
Eliyahu. Oh, that's a good name. Right from where Eliyahu was sitting until about over here. So you're talking about maybe 3 meters, 2 meters, right? And about from this wall to where you guys are sitting, right? By another 2 meters. And it wasn't like there were walls. It was like rock and mud, like literally like you dug a hole in your backyard. And he squeezes us all in there. There were about 20, 22 of us. And we were literally standing like this, like, you know, like a crowded elevator. And he starts telling us the story of this bunker. Before the war, there were 30,000 Jews in Częstochowa. Today there are none. They deported them and sent them all to Auschwitz, and they never came back. This guy saw what was coming, a certain Mr. Fishman. So he dug out this bunker so that his family could hide. And when the Nazis started rounding up the Jews and telling them they were going to a better place, going to a work camp, out in the countryside, he, having watched what had been going on in the ghetto, understood what was coming, and he took his whole family down into this bunker. And in the building, people started hearing. So he brought this neighbor and that neighbor. By the time they were done, there were 35 people in this bunker. Okay, picture 35 people in a bunker this size. Okay? We were 20 people, and we were standing like in a crowded elevator. Now, I don't know about you, but I once got stuck in an elevator. It was the summer of, I think it was 78, 79. There was a big blackout in New York City. And I was, working on Wall Street. And I was down in this big building. And it was the end of the day. And there was a blackout. Famous blackout. Whatever, you could look it up online. And the blackout lasted about 5 or 6 hours. And I was in an elevator. And I was going down from some office building I just delivered. You know, I was like a runner. I was working, whatever, in high school. And the elevator stopped. And the lights went out. And I was sitting in the elevator with some lady, right? And, you know, she's like, said something I can't repeat in Vismenrish. And I said something, I don't remember, maybe I couldn't repeat that in Vismenrish either, I was in high school. And we're like standing there. Okay, so you figure like, okay, a minute, 2 minutes. Now today, you know, there's an emergency light. This is like the 1970s, no emergency light. You're just in the dark, right? After about 5 minutes, we realize we have a problem. because there's no lights and there's nothing going on. And we find the console with the buttons, but of course we don't know what buttons are what buttons, right? So we're pressing all the buttons. We figure like there'll be something to press, to push. We've tried everything we can try. Nothing's happening. Because there's a blackout in New York City. It's not just a blackout in the building. There's no overkick or anything to kick in. After about 10 minutes, this woman starts freaking out, right? And I start thinking about this, and I realize, like, you know, I mean, it's like 6 o'clock in the evening, and we're stuck in the elevator, and nobody can hear us, and nobody's answering us. And what if we're stuck in this thing till tomorrow morning? And I start having this, like, mild, like, whoa, right? I was not thinking about Hilchos Yichud. I was really thinking about how am I going to have this elevator. We were in that elevator about an hour and a half, 2 hours. It was an intense 2 hours, you know. And then, you know, somebody eventually yelled down, is there anybody in the elevators? And we start screaming, yes, you know, we're in the elevators. And they said, okay, there's a blackout. It's not just the building, it's all of New York City, right? And I'm thinking, what do you answer to that? Oh, thank you. I feel much better now, right? And basically he said, look, you know, I know you're in there and there are people in the other elevator and we're going to get to you, but I can't tell you the exact whatever. About 5-6 hours later, they somehow got power going, whatever, we got out of the elevator. Shtabach Shemot. That was like 5 hours. That was like 5 hours, right? And I was thinking to myself, like, what if I have to go to the bathroom? Like, I'm with some lady. Like, I kept thinking, like, it would actually be better if I was on my own. Because then, you know, you're a guy, you go to the corner. But, like, I mean, and that was 5 hours. These are 35 people in a bunker for 12 days. This Mr. Fishman understood that the Nazis would look for these things. So he did something very clever. He chained the door from the outside, piled all this furniture and junk in front of it, and then he went up and hid in the attic. He made a false bottom and he hid there alone. Right? Because he figured if somebody came and found it, they'd see it chained from the outside. They'd say, okay, nobody could be in there because it's chained from the outside. And he would go forage for food. After they cleared out the ghetto after about 2 days, he snuck into other people's homes and found pieces of food, and that's how he kept them alive for 12 days. And I remember sitting in this bunker trying to get my head around 12 days. And imagining, trying to imagine, obviously, what it must feel like to be so apart, so separate, so other, that the entire city needs to not know you're there. Because if they know you're there, you're finished. And that's what the pasuk says. Right? In next week's portion, right? Chukat Balak, whatever. Parashat Balak. Bilam goes and he curses the Jewish people. What are we called? Anybody remember the pasuk? Hein am levadad yishkon. They will be a nation that dwells apart. They're separate. We are other. And I want to take a little bit of a journey into understanding this otherness, this division, to be apart, to be separate. Is that a good thing? Now this week is Parshat Korach. Korach is a complicated figure, okay? If you had to peg him, good guy or bad guy? Bad guy, right? Wicked, you know, rebels against Moshe, gets swallowed up by an earthquake. Clear message that whatever Korach represents needs to not just be dealt with, it needs to be swallowed up. It needs to be destroyed. You will not find anywhere in the Torah a destruction more complete than the destruction of Korach. Okay? And what that has to suggest is that whatever Korach represents is so anathemic to the Jewish people, it's so against what Judaism represents, that it has to be destroyed. Now, what is the obvious problem with that? Oh, I didn't bring a Tanakh. Okay, whatever. What is the obvious problem with that? Obvious problem. This week's parasha, right? Pasuk in Yoma, okay? Now, the pasuk in Mishle, right, says, by the way, anybody here, you know, when someone dies and you say, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, right? Do you know where that comes from? Do you know why we say that? Right? May the righteous be of memory. It's actually a pasuk. It's a pasuk. It's a pasuk in Mishle. Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that we remember the righteous for a blessing. We'll talk about it in our tefillah discussions on Sunday what a blessing is, right? Okay? V'shem Rishaim Yirkav. But the name of the wicked should rot. Okay? That's what the pasuk says. The name of the wicked should rot. And the Gemara in Yoma on Daf Lamed Chet, right in the 38th folio. Oh, thanks. No, we're like that. You get Tzchar Alicha, right? The name of the wicked should rot is actually a halachic statement. It's a pasuk in Mishlei. The Gemara paskins that you're not supposed to mention the name of the wicked. You're supposed to let their name rot, right? Even when we mention Haman and we stamp him, we boo him. That's what that is. So ask me an obvious question. Well, I think it's obvious because I had a chance to think about it, but. Ask me an obvious question. What's your name? Remind me? Ruthie, okay. Why do Americans do that? That is so interesting to me. Somebody's going to answer this question for the end zone. When you ask an Israeli his name, her name, he'll say, David. Like, what do you want of it, right? When you ask an American their name, they say, Ruthie? Like, I think? I'm not sure? Okay.
You ask me, why don't I remember your name?
Oh, okay. Whatever. What's your name? Ruthie. Yes. So, you want to raise your hand. You want to say something? Okay, better. Good, good. Not only why did we mention his name, but why is our parsha named after Korach? Why would you call the parsha Korach if Korach represents something that seems to be so negative? Right? By the way, what is it that Korach represents? Korach is all about division. He's all about separation. In fact, if you look at the beginning of the parsha, what does it say? It says, Vayikach Korach, right? What does the pasuk say? Sorry. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kad ben Levi v'Datan v'Aviram, etc., etc. Korach took. What's the problem with that pasuk? Anybody remember? It doesn't say what he took. It just says he took. So Korach is a taker, right? It doesn't matter what he took. The issue is that he's a taker, and that's true, and that makes sense. And if you look at what Korach's trying to do, he wants to take honor for himself. Okay. But Onkelos, right? Onkelos was, lived in the period of the Tanaim, the period of the Mishnah, right? And was really the first major translation of the Torah called the Targum, okay? Translated into Aramaic. And since he was a Tana, he was a, you know, so what he says is pretty significant. Rashi quotes Onkelos all the time. Onkelos says, Ve'it Peleg Korach. What does Ve'it Peleg mean? Plaga Mincha. What does Ve'it Peleg mean? Do you know?
And they plagged, like through our plaga, there was a dispute.
A division.
Yeah.
Okay? Ve'it Peleg means, and he divided. Korach was a divider. Korach somehow is trying to create a breach between the Jews and Moshe and Aaron and their leadership. And maybe even between the Jews and God. And yet, Korach is a little bit of a paradox. Because Korach also, he wants unity. Ki kolei da kulam kudoshim, the whole nation is holy. Right? V'lama titnasu, why should you be above everybody? You know, Korach was the first communist. Korach wants everybody to have leadership. And everybody, why should there be kohanim? By the way, it would seem, and we're not going to go into the details because it's late, but it would seem that Korach has specifically targeted what role? Anybody know? What does he want to be? He knows he's not going to be the Navi because Moshe's already the Navi. What does he want to be? Kohen Gadol. He wants to be the high priest. So on the one hand, why should you be above everybody else? On the other hand, but I could be above everybody else. So there's a little bit of a paradox in Korach. You know? Some of the Mefarshim, Rabbi Abinel talks about this, suggest that maybe Korach had a different idea of what the Kohuna was all about. Right? But okay. So if Korach is such a divider, then why do we name the parsha after Korach? It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. By the way, the kahuna itself, right? Priesthood is itself a little bit of a paradox, right? The Rambam, based on the Gemara Paskins in Hilchot Klei HaMikdash, it's really interesting, by the way, that the laws of how a Kohen is supposed to behave is contained in the laws of Klei HaMikdash, which literally means the vessels of the temple. Because a Kohen was meant to be a Kli. You know? There were three individuals. You know, we mentioned before in the tour, the concept of Mashiach. Right? Most people think that Mashiach, Messiah, is some kind of magical, mythical figure. That's not really what Mashiach is. Why is somebody called Mashiach? Because he's... You might know? Take a guess? Anointed. He's Mashuach Bashamen. He's anointed. Now, what does it mean he's anointed? Who are the individuals who get anointed? So one is the Kohen Gadol. He gets anointed when he's appointed. Pardon? Okay, the king. Okay, the Kohen Gadol, the king, who else? And a Navi. And someone gets appointed to be the leader of the Jewish people. By the way, it's debatable. Is it because he's a Navi, because he's a Shofet, but whatever, right? Eliyahu anoints Elisha. David is anointed by Shmuel. Now, did you ever wonder about that? What does that mean? First of all, practically, the Rambam talks about how that happens. Do you know what that means, what they do? Anybody? There's oil involved. There's definitely oil involved. There's a cruse of oil, really a horn of oil, Karen Shemen. Okay, right? And they have oil in there, right? And they pour a little bit. This is how they used to keep oil. They pour a drop of oil on the forehead of the person being anointed, and the oil has to drip down. Now, you know, there's the Hasidim and the Misnagdim. Right? The briskers, the Misnagdim, they get really into it. Well, how much is an appropriate drop of oil, and how far does the oil have to run? Is it one tefach? Is it two tefachim? Right? The Hasidim, they're more into, well, what does oil represent? So oil is not meant to, why do you do this? Because oil is not the light. Oil is the vehicle for the light. That's what a Jewish leader is supposed to be. If the Jewish leader starts to think that he's the light, that's when we all get into trouble. As long as the Jewish leader remembers he's just a vehicle for light, the source of the light is much bigger than we are, and the goal of the light is for who is being illuminated, right? So that's why you anoint him. Okay, so all those laws are in Hilchot Klei HaMikdash because he's supposed to be a vessel of the Mikdash. So listen to what the Rambam says, right? In Perek Hei Halacha Zion. This is, by the way, in Sefer Avoda in the book of, you know, sort of the service in the temple, right? Ubayit Yelo Muchan BaMikdash. The Kohen Gadol had to have a home that was set apart in the base of Mikdash. He had a special house on Har Abayit, okay? Fuhu Anikra Lishkat Kohen Gadol. That's the Kohen Gadol section, right? Okay, the Kohen Gadol wing. And he's supposed to sit in the Beis Hamikdash all day. Right? The Kohen Gadol doesn't go to Ben Yehuda. He doesn't get to go to the movies anymore. He's like an Har Abayit. Okay? And he's not supposed to leave. Maybe at night, and that's debatable, he can go out. Right? And only to his home. Which means the only time the Kohen Gadol isn't in the Beis Hamikdash is if he's sleeping. So since the Kohen Gadol was married, he was allowed to go to his home to sleep, right? But he wasn't allowed to go to his home to hang out and have a shmooze. Like, if he was awake, he was in the Beis Hamikdash, he was the service of the people, right? V'ye beito b'Yerushalayim, in his home, if he has a home, his home has to be in Yerushalayim, v'eino zaz misham. Okay? Now, if you think about it, the Kohen Gadol is in Har Abayit. He is very separate. And a better example of this is in Hilchot Beit HaMikdash, what you do in the Beis Hamikdash. The Rambam says like this: Kishem she'ena kor. This is in Perak Aleph Halachatet. Kishem she'ena koranim muzarin alayayim ela bishat biyala mikdash. Just like a kohen, a kohen is not allowed to drink. Okay, so like if you're into a good l'chaim, do it soon before the Mashiach comes because you might have a problem, right? Okay, not allowed to drink ela bishat biyala mikdash. But that's only when you're in the business mikdash, when you're on duty, right? You know, soldier doesn't drink on duty. Cohen's duty is in the basement because you don't drink. Okay? Kach ein asulim legadel pera ela b'shav b'yat mikdash. And the same thing, you're not supposed to let their hair grow wild. You have to get a haircut when you're in the basement. But if you're not in the basement, there's no problem. B'me dvarim emulim b'kohen ediyot. That's a regular Kohen. Aval Kohen gadol asul legadel pera v'likro b'gadav le'olam. A Kohen gadol, he's not allowed to drink. He's not allowed to grow his hair ever. Sharei tamid hu b'mikdash. That's what the Rambam says. That's where he belongs. So the Kohanah, to a certain degree, is separate. It's other. It's apart. And yet, somebody suggests to me a proof text that the Kohen, and certainly the Kohen Gadol, is supposed to be anything but apart. Famous Mishnah. Everybody knows this Mishnah, you just aren't thinking of it right now, so you don't know you know this Mishnah. But you know this Mishnah. Think Aaron. Kohen Gadol. What was special about Aaron? Some Pirkei Avos. Anybody? Ah, oh, right. See, I told you all know this. Oh, hey, Shalom, right? This is who, by the way, says this? Can I remember? It's easy for me because I had a chance to think about it. Look it up, right? Pardon? Yeah, Akiva's a good guess, but no. Okay? But it's a good guess, right? Hillel Omer. This is in Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yud Bet. Okay? Hillel Omer, have me tell me Dav Shal Aaron. Be a student of Aaron. The Kohen Gadol. Because who is Aaron? Ohev Shalom is one of the most beautiful Mishnah in all of Shas. Ohev Shalom. He loves Shalom. Right? He loves... By the way, what is Shalom? Ah, so that's what everybody says. Okay, fine. So what is peace? Good. Very good. Ruthie is getting it, right? Fullness, wholeness. You know why we sing Shalom Aleichem on Friday night? I know they tell you all the stories with the angels and the table and the this and the window. You want to know what Shalom Aleichem is really about? Shalom Aleichem is you sit down at the Shabbat table. And before we start, are we complete? Are we complete? Like if you go to a Shabbos table and everybody at the table doesn't know everybody's name, how could you say Kiddush? You're not there yet. Right? That's the challenge of Shabbat, to make us whole. That's why when you meet another person, you say Shalom Aleichem. What does that mean? It means wholeness. I'm missing something without you. I've become more complete. Right? Because we're all one. By the way, it's worth expanding on this. Expanding? Just for a moment. Okay? This is a really important idea, but I'm going to give you the 30 seconds worth. Okay? How many lights are in this room? You know what? How many lights are on this side of the room? Make it easy. See, that's what everybody does. Everybody does that. Everybody does this, right? Because we're looking at that. That's not the light. That's just the vehicle for the light, the source of the light. The light's here. Do you understand that? Okay? It's true, right? Agreed? Right? The light's here. Now, by the way, that's why it says, Kiner mitzvah v'tohara, right? Kiner Hashem nishmat adam. You know what it's like? It's like there are two parts to who we are. There are two parts to who we are. Okay? There's the physical and the spiritual. The physical is limited. This is the physical. Okay? But this is not me. This is not who I am. This is just my arm. Right? Elon, right? If Elon was practicing juggling, there's a big wedding coming up, he wants to do some good shtick, so he's juggling buzz saws. He's very excited. He's learning to juggle buzz saws. And he's juggling, Shalom Aleichem. Right, Akiva Rogowski, right? Shalom Aleichem, right? He's juggling buzz saws, okay? Juggling buzz saws. And one of them gets away from him. And this buzz saw comes, Shalom Aleichem, Erev Tov, comes hurtling through the air, and it knocks off my arm. Now that'd be depressing, you know, be a little frustrating, right? But I'd still be the same Binny. I might be a little more depressed, but the same Binny. I'm just Binny with one arm less. I'm still the same person. So who is me? So we believe that there's a part of us that is physical. The physical ends. Everything physical ends. That's the definition of physical. Physical is limited. It's here, it's not there. Right? Death means something physical ends. It all ends. No reason to assume that the spiritual ends. Definition of the spiritual is not physical. It has no limits. Love is not physical. And that's why love has no limits. You'll see one day you'll get married. I remember we were married and we had our first child. And then Dorit was pregnant with our second child, with Yonatan. And we had this ridiculously insane conversation. We were trying to figure out, how are we going to love this next kid? Because we love this kid, Mayan, so much. How are we going to, and I've met lots of young couples who have the same conversation, because you just can't imagine. Then the second child is born, and you discover there's plenty more love. There's no limit to love. So now if a person dies... So let's imagine Rafi and I, we physically ended yesterday, Chas v'Shalom, right? We physically ended, you know, whatever you want to call it. And they put the vessels that held who we really are, the bodies, in the ground. But we're still, so now we're not bodies, we're just neshamot. So now that's interesting. How would you tell the difference between Rafi's neshama and mine? You know what the answer is? You wouldn't. Because you would discover that they're really one. Just like the light. You can't tell the difference between the light that's from that lamp and the light that's from that lamp. It all becomes one. Right? Okay? So the world is meant to be all about oneness, and that's what Aaron is. Aaron is about bringing people together. And yet Aaron is very apart. Korach is a divider. And yet Korach seems to want togetherness. Why do we name the parasha after Korach if Korach is so evil that he gets swallowed up? It doesn't seem to make sense. Right? So, by the way, it's interesting that the end of the parasha, does anybody remember the last topic in this week's parasha? Last stop in this parasha is the 24 matnot kuna, the gifts that we give to the Kohen, truma, masa, whatever they are, right? Which is the Jewish people kind of reconnecting with kuna. By the way, who are we? We're called the Mamlechet Kohanim. We're a nation of priests. On the one hand, we're a part. On the other hand, anybody who studied Judaism understands that Jewish people aren't meant to be other. We're meant to be a vehicle to bring the world together. That's what we believe in, unity. Right? So how do you understand this? Right? Sometimes togetherness is good. By the way, just so you understand, one of the things that we're going to get to talk about this summer is the value of defining our terms. We do this a lot. We talk about words and we don't stop to define them, right? So when I say that togetherness is good, we have to define what that means, okay? The word tov is a word that appears, right, in various... Where's the first place that you find the word tov? Right? Vayalakim ki tov, right? What's the first time you find the statement Vayalakim ki tov? About what? About the light. Vayalakim et ha'or ki tov. By the way, it's interesting. That is the only... There are only two places in the entire Torah.
And Moshe.
Very good. Right? Vatero toki tovu. Okay? First time we find the concept of good is concerning light. Now that should help us understand what good is, but those are two pretty broad topics. So there's another way to define something, and that's to see what the opposite of it is. Right? So what is the opposite of tov? Lo tov. Now the phrase lo tov, something's not good, that appears only twice in the entire Torah. So that's a little easier to look at. Does anybody know where it says lo tov? Excellent, that's one, and what, pardon? Lotov Eotadam Lazado. Right before, hang on one second, right before Chava is created, it says, Lotov Eotadam Lazado, it's not good for man to be alone. Eselo Ezer Kenegdo. Now put aside for a moment the question of if it's not good, why'd you create us that way? Put that aside. Right? The only other time we find Lotov is by Yitro. When Yitro sees that Moshe is judging all day, all on his own, in the beginning of Parshat Yitro, it says, Lo tov yot chalav adech, it's not good to be alone. The definition of that which isn't good is to be alone. And therefore, the definition of good is the opposite of being alone, which is togetherness. Hine ma tov, what is good, umana'im shevet achim gam yachad, that we come together. So when I say that togetherness is good, that's the definition of good, is being together and being one. Right? That's the goal. And yet we're supposed to be separate. We're supposed to be other. So how do you understand that? Right? The Rambam, by the way, in Hilchot Deot, I'm sure this is going to come up over the course of the summer. The Rambam has a phenomenal... Oh, I didn't bring this. The Rambam has a phenomenal recipe for character development. It's the second set of halachot in the entire... Mishnah Torah, the 14 books of the Rambam. I don't know why people don't study it more. We studied it in Oraita. It's a really powerful recipe. It's called Hilchot Deot, literally the laws of character development. And it's basically the Rambam's recipe for balance. You know, it's all good to learn all this Torah. It's interesting that the Rambam puts this at the beginning of Halacha. Right? Before Hilchot Shabbos, before Hilchot Tefillah, before Kashrus. How do you become a better human being? Because if you're learning all this Torah and it's not making you a better person, then what's the point? And the Rambam has a recipe. You know, how do I figure out what my character flaws are? How do I overcome them? How do I become a better human being? How do I achieve balance in my life? How do I overcome anger? What do I do when someone I love is doing something I can't stand? How do I avoid lashon hara? All the biggies, they're all created in this little recipe. Unbelievable. The Rambam is a master organizer. By the way, if this topic interests you, so since we've been doing this for a few years in Oraita, so eventually somebody asked me to record it. It's all recorded. It's like 70 classes online. You can ask me. I'll send you a link, whatever it is. But the Rambam Hilchot Deot in Perek Vav, Halacha, is it Perek Vav? Yeah, Perek Vav Aleph. So, the Rambam says, Derech Briyato Shel Adam, it's normal that a person gets drawn in his character, B'deotav U'Ma'asav, Achar Re'ev V'Chavirav. You get affected by the people around you. So the Rambam says, "Lefichach tzarich adam litchaber letzadikim, leishev etzel chachamim." You got to connect with people who are good, people who are righteous, people who are balanced, right? V'yitrachek min harishayim, and you should distance yourself from the wicked. Halchim b'choshech, etc., etc. And the Rambam has a whole recipe here. What do you do if you find yourself in an environment that's negative? You know, you're on college campus, and you have a room, and you know, you check off in the box, I want to do the potluck with roommates. I don't know why people do this, but people do this. And I've heard some tremendous horror stories. We had a student once in Florida who thought it would be like interesting his freshman year just to take potluck and see who he ended up with. He ended up with a psychotic anti-Semite. It was just unbelievable. He walks in the first day, the guy has like a Confederate flag, and Mein Kampf on the day, it was really bad, right?
Oh,
and,
my God.
So after a few months, he calls me up, you know, we're having this discussion. He's like, what should I do? I'm like, okay, let's think about this. Get out! Not complicated, right? That's what the Rambam says. Like, if you're in a negative space, yeah, sometimes you have to be apart, right? But sometimes you want to be together. How do you find that balance? So, and how do you relate to Korach? So listen to this idea. It's a 3-minute idea, and then we'll stop, we'll turn out the lights, we'll do a little chayach choshech. There's a Noam HaElimelech. I recently developed an affinity for the Noam HaElimelech, even though some of the stuff that he shares is just way above my pay grade, which is a nice way of saying I don't see how he sees it shot in the pasuk. But when we went to Poland this year, I have a cousin who always said, you know, we're related to the Noam HaElimelech. And I never really knew how. It was like one of those things I always wanted to find out. When I found... Pardon? Oh, then we are definitely related. Okay. Okay, we've got to continue that. It's pretty cool. So listen to this story. It's an amazing story. So I was in England about a month before we went to Poland, and I have a first cousin who I'm close with, and I know that he knows this whole deal, right? So I said to him, you know, we got together, we went to my mother's English, I went to my grandparents together. I said, by the way, I know we're something related to the Noam HaElimelech. I'm going to be in Poland in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to the grave of the Noam HaElimelech. How are we related? He goes, oh, what do you mean? And he shows me the family tree, then he sends it to me. I'm a direct descendant of the great-granddaughter of the Noam HaElimelech, right? Like straight father to mother to son to Chvaisnisht, whatever, right down, right? I was like, wow, I thought I was like some distant cousin. I didn't know I'm a direct descendant. So I thought that was pretty cool, right? So I figured like, okay, I got to start studying Noam HaElimelech. I'm not related to Noam HaElimelech. So we go there. Pardon? The Noam HaElimelech was one of the students. There were two brothers, right? The Elimelech and of Lezhensk and his brother Zusha. And they were students of the Maggid of Mizrich. You're talking about late 1700s. And when the Maggid of Mizrich was really the Talmud Chaver of the Baal Shem Tov who started Hasidus, right? In the Carpathian Mountains, you know, late 1600s, early 1700s. And before the Maggid of Mizrich died, he knew that this was a movement that needed to spread. The Jews needed, I mean, there's a longer discussion, broader than our topic time, why the Jewish people needed Hasidut. If you want, after this year, we do a Q&A, you can come over and ask me these questions with pleasure. Anyway, he sent them, those two, Zusha and Elimelech, to spread Hasidus. And they both did it in different ways. And the Noam HaElimelech basically was the one who really, he basically put Hasidus on the map. So he's huge in the world of Hasidus, right? And I had never studied him, and to be honest, I opened up the Noam HaElimelech a few times, and I don't know what, I just, way over my head. Like, I don't see how, what this has to do with that pasuk, I don't get it. But I've been looking for like a good idea of Noam HaElimelech because before he was my ancestor. Anyway, we went to Poland and I went to Noam HaElimelech's kever. We went all together and I told the guys, listen, I recently found out I'm a direct descendant. So we did a nigga and I told the story, whatever, fine, right? And we finished, we had a tish there, great. After that, we have a student from England actually, and he said, you know, tomorrow we're going to the graves, like my father found out where we're descended from, whatever, and we're going to the graves. He said, okay, he wants to speak and do a scene, whatever else we did there. I said, sure, like, you know, which Rebbe is this, whatever. He says, Naftali of Rupchitz. I said, you're a direct descendant of Naftali of Rupchitz? He said, yeah. I said, well, you know, Naftali of Rupchitz was the Talmud Muvak of the Noam HaElimelech. So that's pretty cool. But anyway, so I finally found an idea that really speaks to me of the Noam HaElimelech. I'm probably going to go straight to Gehenna for this year, but okay. The Noam HaElimelech says something very cryptic. He says, if you want to understand, and this is quoted, by the way, in the Sichos of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, if you want to understand Korach's actions, it's like the second day of creation when Hashem divided the Rakia, the firmaments. Now, the second day of Kriyat HaOlam, right? And the first day Hashem creates light, and that's unity. But what does it say on the second day? V'avdel Elokim, right? Ben Mayim Lamayim, right? Hashem divides, okay? V'yom Elokim Yirakia B'toch HaMayim, let there be sky, firmament, whatever it means, in the water, right? The whole world was water at that point. It was all chaos. V'hi Mavdil Ben Mayim Lamayim, and let it separate the waters. V'yas Elokim B'tarakia, so Hashem creates this. He does, He makes this firmament, this heaven, this sky. Vayavdel ben amayim, asher mitachat arkiyah ben amayim, asher mi'al arkiyah. There's water up there, there's water down below, and the sky separates it. Vayichen, vaykra Elohim arkiyah shamayim, and he calls this firmament sky. Vayiel vayvokei yom shni. That's the end of the day. What's missing from the second day? Kitov. Second day is the only day that doesn't say vayelokim kitov. And all the mafarshim, including Rashi, notice this. Now on the third day. Do you ever notice that people like to get married on Tuesdays?
Separation, so it's separate, so they're not happy.
Oh, okay. So right. So Rashi says. So Rashi says two things. Rashi says that on the second day, since it doesn't say kitov, right? Okay, it doesn't say kitov because the second day is about separation, and separation is not good, right? Just like we said before. Now on the third day, it says kitov twice. So Rashi explains because the completion of the separation of the second day happens on the third day. On the third day, right, the separation ends, and this is how Rashi says it. Why is there no, and God saw it was good on the second day? Because it wasn't finished yet. Right? It was separate. Ad yom ha-shlishi, until the third day. It started separating on the second day. Something that isn't finished is not good yet. It hasn't come together. You know, you ever have the phrase like, you know, you're doing something, you're writing a paper, you have all the notes, all the interviews, you're trying to work on it, and then eventually it all comes together. What does that mean? It's good, you figured it out. Ubegimel, on the third day, shenigmara melechet amayim, when the work of setting up the water starts, finishes, kafalbo kitov. Then there are two kitovs. One for the finishing of what happened on the second day, and one for whatever happens on the third day. Okay, very nice, cute idea. What's the problem with this? What's the problem with this? Anyone want to guess? What's the problem with this? Second day doesn't say kitov, because Hashem divides it. Division's not good, and it's not finished. Third day, it all comes together. That's good. So on the third day, it says kitov twice. What's the obvious problem? Pardon?
It's not like it comes together apart.
Okay. But the second day is all about being apart. So that's why it doesn't say kitov. But ask me a question. Right. Oh, we're going to get there in a minute. That's very good. But before we get there, what's the obvious question here? It doesn't say, well, I think it's obvious because I thought of it, right?
They didn't like go exactly like back together. It's not like a reversal.
Well, we could have that discussion about why what happens on the third day is togetherness, but that would get us too deep into Briyat HaOlam. We'll never finish Korach, right? So the second day is no good because it's all apart. On the third day, when it all comes together, it is good. What's the obvious question? Ah! Why don't you just bring it back together on the second day? Why are you waiting for the third day? What, God ran out of time? Like, that's ridiculous. Like, Akash Baruch was standing there with the big watch. He's like, oh, gosh, it's the second day. All right, I'll finish it tomorrow. It's ridiculous. So it must be. And I think maybe this is what the Noam Lenach, it must be that what Ruthie says is correct. Sometimes, apartness, it's not good, but it needs to be. It needs to be. There are times when we need to be set apart. You know, so Hashem creates Adam alone. Whatever Adam means. By the way, Adam does not mean man. People make that mistake because there is no English word for Adam. Ish means man. Adam is Ish and Isha together, right? Because Etzem me'atzamiu v'asar mi'psari, they're separated. Adam is actually together. But he's alone. There's no one, no partnership. So why does Hashem create Adam alone if it's not good that he be alone? And yet everything Hashem creates is good. Because in order to get to the goodness of being together, you first have to experience the aloneness. Which means the aloneness isn't good, but it is good. It's Korach. You know what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says? The Gemara in Sanhedrin, I've got Kuf Chet, I'm in bed. Oh, one second. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, do you know why Korach is called Korach? Shenasa Korcha b'Yisrael. Because Korach's rebellion created division, it created a bald spot. You know how we say a bald spot in modern Hebrew? Karachat. Because a person who's bald, right, the hair doesn't quite come together. Right? There's certain ordinances you couldn't give the shear to. It might be, you know, but here, Baruch Hashem, all good, right? Okay? That's what it means. So why am I naming the parasha after Korach? Because sometimes you need otherness. You need separation. You need division. Because that's what allows you to get back together. That's the secret of Korach. The Kohen is apart because in his apartness he's able to bring togetherness. And I'll just finish, you know, with this thought. I really think that's what this summer is. You know, Jewish people, they go to, they leave Mitzrayim. Where are they going? They're going to Israel. But they take a stop on the way. Where do they stop? Akbar. Har Sinai. They're going to Har Sinai to get the Torah. But here's something interesting. Har Sinai was never the goal. We don't even know where Har Sinai is. Because it's not important. Har Sinai was just a stepping stone. It was a vehicle. The Jewish people are apart. But their goal is not to be apart. Their goal is to come back together. You know, you meet people who think, you know, there's a Sfas Emes, and it's hard to know whether we're understanding this correctly, and we'll finish with this. But the Sfat Emet, the Ger Rebbe, he asks a really interesting question. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu. First time Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to God. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe, Moshe, Vayomer Hineini. What's the first line God tells Moshe when Moshe says, here I am, he's ready, whatever Hashem wants of him? So if you were God, and you have eternity to prepare for this moment, you're introducing yourself to Moshe, which is the moment where Torah is going to, it's the beginning of the journey that will eventually bring Torah to the world, change destiny. You get a chance, like first line, opening line, what would you say? You would say, oh, Shema Moshe, Shem Elokecha, something powerful. What's the first line God says to Moshe? Excuse me, could you take your shoes off, please? Shalom Alechem Elokecha. Have you think about that? That's nuts. That's the first thing Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu. This is what Sfas Emes says. This is so deep. He says Moshe Rabbeinu is going to reach the highest point that a human being ever reached. Pe'el Pe' Adaber Bo. He's going to get all the way up there. Says Hashem to Moshe, take your shoes off. Feel the earth beneath your feet because the goal is not up there. The goal is down here. So I think about this a lot because, you know, you get students, all right, the boys, they come for a year. And it's very easy to fall into the trap and to think that this is the goal. That if you could stay 2 years and 3 years and 9 years and 10 years, just sit and learn forever. The Rambam, by the way, makes this very clear in Hilchos Talmud Torah and Perek Gimel, and that is not the goal. There's value to it. There's something very special about stepping off the ride, about separating, about being apart, about taking some time for introspection, about growing yourself. But the goal is not here. This is the vehicle for the goal which is out there. The challenge of this summer and what we do with it is precisely the ability to be a part on the one hand, to create a community, to create something special, but it has value only if we succeed in taking it back out there and having it make a difference. Now, I can't tell you what that means, because for everybody that means something different. And I think you have to find what it means for you. But I wonder if maybe that's the message of Korach. We call the parasha Korach because even though Korach rebelled and divisiveness and wickedness and you have to destroy that, remember that there's something valuable in that idea nonetheless. Maybe that's why we call it parasha Korach. So that's a little bit of food for thought on the topic of being apart. You know, there was a period of time not so long ago where Jews couldn't do this. You know, we couldn't sit in public and learn Torah and do all of this together. We were hiding in bunkers underground. And we had to be apart. And we had to be hidden. But that was obviously not the goal. The goal was that one day we would be able to create something to be a vehicle to help bring the world together. And we are blessed to be the generation that's starting to get to see that. Yiratzon. So, everybody should have a Shabbat Shalom. Really, it's awesome. Let me just...